Today's Perek in Tanakh is Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yod Gimel. Now we've seen that we have begun now a completely new tkufa and a new level of relationship, and we hope that we've begun it on the right foot. Now we've already got some intimations that things are not good. First of all, the entire Ma'amad yesterday of Shmuel indicated that the process of selecting the Melech, asking for the Melech, and so on, that all of this was no good from the beginning, and that it was Nechshav to be a tremendous failure, to the extent that Bnei Yisrael were literally terrified that maybe this is like the straw that breaks the camel's back, and I will never be able to get back. And he says, Adarabba, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be with you. You just have to recognize, not to take it out of context, this king. And if it's done right, it has a chance. It doesn't sound all that great. And back at the beginning, even before that, when he first meets Shaul and sends Shaul now on his way, before there's the actual milchama with the Plishtim, he tells Shaul that the day is going to come when you will go to Gilgal to take care of the Plishtim, and you're to wait for me until I come 7 days. And when you wait for me, I will come and bring the Olah, and then everything will be taken care of. Now, in essence, that is the Kool-Aid acid test of the Malchus. And it's a brilliant test. People, I think, don't properly recognize the power of a test like this. Because what Shmuel did is put him into an almost impossible position, as we're going to see in this parak. And the power of that impossible position brought out whatever problems there might be in the Malchut. So this was not just a little issue. It was actually taken into consideration in the original Hamlocha of Shaul, that Hamlocha, in a sense, is Al-Tanai. Let us see what happens when that event takes place. At the time, we didn't notice that it was so important. It was just sort of like a nevuah about the future. The day is going to come, you're going to go down to Gilgal, and meanwhile, do what you can. Which, it turns out, was actually a very misleading and dangerous thing to say to him. So that this whole thing is almost a setup to destroy Shaul, and it's a horrible thing. Because first he tells him, look, we don't know what's going to be. Do what you can. Go to Zayatcha. Do whatever you can do. And he does. And he has this tremendous success with Nachash. And now everybody's feeling high, and Shaul's great. And he's feeling. He's a melech. He's got this Ruach HaLakim, that is Tzuleach HaLav, and a Ruach of Gvura, and he's able to achieve things. And now it comes time for him to deal with the real issue. The real issue was, as Shmuel told him, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tzivui and intent in the creation of this Malchus was similar to Yitziat Mitzrayim, to be Moshiach Miyat Plishtim. So he understands that this is really, for him, this is the purpose and focus of his Malchut. And so, Ben Shana Shaul Ben Malchut. So he was a year old at his Malchut. Of course, it doesn't make much sense, but wherever it says an age like that with all the other cases, it's talking about their chronological age. So it's very strange. It can't mean that he's 1 year old, obviously. He has children, and we're going to see that Yonatan is immediately active. And so Chazal say, Ben Shaul B'molcho, maybe a reference to his Madrega. So he's Ben Shana, in the sense, says the Gemara, he's Belichet. He's perfect. And surprisingly, the Gemara says that was the biggest problem. In other words, the parak begins by pointing out the issues that end up destroying Shaul. And one thing, says the Gemara, says, Mipnei ma lo nimshecha malchut beit Shaul, is too perfect. There's nothing that you could possibly say about him that was wrong. And if that's the case, he has nothing to really doubt himself over other than his own personality. So then his psychological issues he can overcome. But then it's immediately a function of what he's thinking about himself, rather than the fact that there's an innate busha from your own failure. That's dangerous, as it's impossible. A malchus has to be built on scandal, not just on having something wrong. It needs the lashana kupa shel shratzim. You should be carrying around an entire bag of filth, the skeletons in the closet, exactly. So that the moment that he's imta zuar ba'ato alav, the moment he starts feeling high about himself, Amrim lo, excuse me? Chazor le'acharecha. So that chazor le'acharecha is a check and balance on the malchut that's internal. So that means the moment we hear these words, Ben Shana Shaul b'malcho, we realize that, this doesn't sound good. Now another meaning that Gemara learns out is that all of the cases we have a chatan and a nasi and gedula are mechaperet avon. Like Yom HaKippurim. So we know, Chatan and so on, but Chatan Domel HaMelech. But that's exactly where he's Domel HaMelech here. In that, Ben Shana means Nimchalu Kol Avonotav. So Nimchalu Kol Avonotav, we've already seen. He was Mitapech Li'ishacher. He's like a different person. So being on that completely different Madriga means it's a totally new beginning. No avonot, same as the chatan. So however we understand it, the Gemara talks about it shows that the Gemara, at the time of the Gemara, they were sensitive to the two layers of meaning that have to do with what's coming in this parak. Because the Gemara says, with darsha, that it means ben shana. So yeah, ke ben shana shalo ta'am tam chet. Says Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, maybe means ke ben shana who sits around the dirty diapers. Right? So maybe it means yiz meluch lach betit u bitzoa. What? Like what in the world are you thinking at it? So then he started having these horrible nightmares in which Malachi Pachat were coming and tearing him a piece. So he gets up and says, okay. Na neti lachem atzvamot sha'u ben kish. Same thing happens the next night. He says, okay, I give up. Na neti lachem sha'u ben kish melech Yisrael. Then they let up. But what this means is that he actually saw the ben shana as referring just as much to what can go wrong. What's it we're saying? Yeah, but it has a double meaning, doesn't it? When you think of a ben shana, it's all very nice. It's so cute. But then you got to change their diapers. And that's exactly what's happening over here. It's all very nice. Everything looks great. But the bottom line is you're going to have to change his diapers. And in no time at all, the whole thing is useless. So there is a remez at the beginning of the parak that there's really bad things coming. Ushtei shanim malach ha-Yisrael. The total length of his malchut is only 2 years. Now, this, some of the Rishonim argue if they're not committed to the Seder Azmanim of the Gemara, that it means that this took place after the first 2 years, that it doesn't include the years in which David HaMelech was being chased by Shaul, but there was still Shaul, and maybe that took a long time. And in fact, I mean, the historians, again, I mean, Josephus has a 40-year malchut for Shaul. And, you know, this only means what happened to the end of 2 years, which the Rabbah goes along with. Again, the Seder Ha'ilam takes the 2 years, the Gemara takes the 2 years of Darachim as being absolute. This was the entire Malchut, and includes the period in which Shmuel had actually been, in the words of the Gemara, Malach Shaul Vishmuel, and this is the 2 years that he's Malach alone. And what happens? It's time now to set up an army. Until now in the Yemot HaShoftim, we saw there was no army. There was no national army. Basically, the response was always of the Shevet, and whoever would come with that, but the Yotzi Le'ezrat Hashem Be'Giborim, but there was no sense, certainly not a standing army. There wasn't even an army. There wasn't even a reserves. Now, that itself is part of the Ein Melech B'Yisrael. There's no sense of a national identity that an army gives. The first thing that he did is he set up an army. So Be'Yivchar Lo Shaul Shloshet Alafim Yisrael. So he had now already an army that he had worked with. That was the army that he had used against Nachash. He took 3,000 of the Mufkarim, Mishrael, and those would be permanently a striking force. Vayiyu im Shaul, alpayim b'michmash, ubar beit el. So he would keep 2,000 of them under his direct command. And there were elef hayu im Yonatan, b'givat binyamin. Now, it's strange. At this point, we have no idea who Yonatan is. It's not important for us at this point to know who Yonatan is. It's only in the next parak that it becomes very important. So this record is not coming to teach us who his sons were. So there's a commander, Yonatan. So there's 1,000 with Yonatan who are in Givat Binyamin, or Givat Shaul, that became the capital, basically. V'yeter ha'am shilach ish lo'alaf. After the war, he sent everybody else back home.
1%.
Yeah, 1% basically of the entire army. He kept as a standing army. And shilach Yisrael does not mean that they scattered, but rather that he was sholeach, which may well mean that there were already reserves. Yeah. So in other words, I know where you are, who you are, and I'm sending you home. So now you're going home as part of the pekuda of the army. Be available at home, so we'll know where to reach you. It's an entirely different thing. It's not vayelech ish lo'alo. It's being nishlach ayidei amalchut ish lo'alo. So there's a very different ambience already about the way in which we are facing our nation and our enemies. And so vayach Yonatan eight netziv plishtim asher begeva vayishmu plishtim. So it's, what starts off as a small incident is that there is this representative, could be a tax representative of the plishtim, like usually what the netziv is there for, to take the tribute and so on. And he's in Geva, and Yonatan kills him. It was that which was meant to trigger the plishtim. Okay, the plishtim hear about this. V'sha'ul taka b'shofar b'chol ha'aretz le'mor, yishmu'u ivrim. That's what the plishtim call us. You like that? So come on, Hebrews. Let all the Hebrews know that things are not good anymore. They now realize that this was the kind of move Yes, everybody was trying to do their best not to get the Plishtim angry. They understood it's beyond that. There's nothing we're going to do about this now. It's not going to be enough to open your wallets up, pay somebody off. They are furious. Niv'ash means I've had my fill. The Niv'ash means to just be disgusted with something already. So that's it. There's no way out of this. This is war. Vayitzar, so they hear, of course it wasn't Shaul, but that doesn't matter because Shaul is the Malach. So it is Shaul. It's the Chol Yisrael. We're going to see fantastically that this is the first time that Eretz Canaan is called Eretz Yisrael in all of Tanakh. An amazing thing. There was a concept of Eretz B'nai Yisrael and so on. But this is now a new idea. There is a nation. And so Shaul and Yisrael is now Niv'ash, Vayitzaku Ha'am Acharei Shaul HaGilgal. And so everybody gathers now to respond to the summons. They all show up in Gilgal, and the Plishtim are going absolutely bananas. They want total war. So Plishtim, that's really Lachem in Yisrael, 30,000 Rechev, they got 30,000 tanks, 6,000 Prashim, they've got 6,000 now horsemen, Va'am Kechol HaShal Svat Hayam L'Rov. I mean, the army, nobody can count the army. And so they go now and set up the army in Michmash. This was overwhelming. And so, this is, and these Plishtim are pretty scary people at this point. And they're an extremely powerful army and an extremely organized force. And they've got, as we saw before, a federation. And the federation, they have meetings. And it's not just a bunch of immigrants as they were originally in the early days of the Plishtim. This is a very, very serious fighting force and is the main thing that people are worried about in the days. It's actually some frightening pictures of what the Mitzrayim maintained of their wars with the Plishtim. On the walls. These are scary people. These are Plishtim warriors. And the way the Mitzrayim saw them. These are like serious, powerful guys. This is like contemporary pictures, basically. So this is not like, these are not the kind of people you want to meet in the dark alley, that's for sure. And so the response of Yisrael was terror. Get me out of here! Because that's where the army had been, and that's where Lamaisa Shmuel told him to be. That's where the Ola was going to be brought. And as we mentioned earlier, the importance of Gilgal is that it's restructuring Yerushat Haaretz. It's symbolic. This is the place in which we were finally complete Gilgal, the Charpat Mitzrayim, and this Ivrim business is the Charpat of the Plishtim, essentially. It was all about Charpat, so it was Nachash, Charpat Yisrael. That's all that they're looking for. It's to crush the nature of Yisrael. We see this later on at Tehillim, where the nature of Melchemes Gog Magog is also, and throughout the Nevi'im, Kol Lashon Lot Etzliv. It's the Lashon, it's the way that they attempt to, the way they attempt to make you be perceived in the world.
Wow.
That you see very much. That's exactly the main milchama against Israel today. Is a function of Lashon. That's the incredible power of Nachash. It brings the suit. So what happens over here is that the Plishtim were nesfu lilachem in Israel, and people are terrified. So Ish Israel ra'u ki tzarlo kinigas ha'am. That's the noksim that we had back in the story of Mitzrayim. Same Lashon. So they see their boy, oh boy, things are bad. We've got nowhere to go. And so, therefore, the only thing that they decided to do was run. And so, yeah, and they ran, boy. Did they run? Vayitchabu ha'am ba'ma'arot, u'b'chavachim, u'b'asla'im, u'b'atzerichim, u'b'aborot. They hid wherever they could hide. So you have a choach. You have a choach. You have then the plural of choach is a strange plural.
What is it?
So it's chavachim, in the same way that a shor is shivarim. So this is choach, it's thorns. In other words, it would be the equivalent of hiding behind barbed wire. I figured nobody was going to come in here. So they protected themselves with barbed wire, but we have all of these various types of things. So they would be among the hiding among holes in the stone or in any areas that were fortified in Mitzudah. A tzariach we saw before in Beit El, over there the tzariach of Beit El and Shoftim was a tall tower. But whatever, everybody tried to protect themselves as best they could. And not only that, an acute play on words, the Ivrim of Ru et Hayarden, they ran, boy did they run. They left the country, and they crossed the Yarden to go to Eretz Gad and Gilad. Meanwhile, Shaul is Zodenu ba Gilgal. And v'chol ha'am chardu acharav. Those people, the fighting people, so they're chardu, they're like, you sense the suspense, right? That's what chardu means. Chardu acharav means, you know, mishta'er, ladat. What great thing is he going to be doing? Now look at what's happening. He can't do anything. Shmuel told him to wait 7 days. And he's waiting. And the people are scattering. And his 3,000 men and his 300,000 men are no longer 300,000 men. They're no longer 3,000 men. They're no longer 2,000 men. They're no longer 1,000 men. And everybody is saying something's wrong. And he doesn't have the guts to go out and to fight. And there he is. Vayochal shivat yamim lamoed asher Shmuel amar asher Shmuel v'lo ba Shmuel agil. So now he... No, he thought he was going to arrive at the beginning of the Shiva Siyam, right? Okay, there's just so much I can take. Exactly. Vayafet sa'am me'alav. And people are scattering. And he's about to be left without an army. So here, this is absolutely mad. So he's the king. He's been told what he's supposed to do. And then before he was told, do whatever you can. And soon there's going to be nothing to do. The Plishtim are going to attack. And he's going to be sitting there waiting for Shmuel. Sorry, Plishtim, could you go back and we could do this tomorrow, take two? What's he supposed to do? So this is a setup that is almost impossible for any human being to tolerate. And what it redid, as David was Marames, was the Maisa Egel. In other words, at the beginning of the Knisa Labrit, the one thing that you needed to do was wait. Vayar ha'am ki boshesh boshe oredet min ha'ar is directly connected to the concept of primal busha, which is why initially what you have is the reconstruction of mortality. Paskazulmasan of the Nachash at Har Sinai. Look at all of the interrelationships. So Paskazulmatam at of the Nachash, it was immediately Choser because I can't take it anymore. And that, of course, is what the word Egel means. Egel means do it fast. Ba'agala. Ba'agala bizman karit.
Do it fast.
Fast, quickly. Right? That's why an agala is an agala. It runs. Right? So ba'agala bizman karit. So here you are. You're putting a human being in an almost impossible position. On the one hand, he's got all the things he believes that he's supposed to be doing. Everybody is looking at him to do things. He should have been doing it 6 days ago. First it was yesterday. It was 2 days ago. Now it's 6 days ago. Are you crazy? What's going on? The almost impossible to ignore stimulus that this kind of situation creates in a person to do something. The immediate response is do something.
Doesn't matter.
Do something. And the every human being feels this. I mean, the psychological mechanisms which prevent a person from not doing what he's doing, even though he knows it's a stupid thing to be doing, because he has to be doing. Here is Shaul with every, as you say, every biological mechanism saying do something. With every sense of his malchus meaningful, do something. And the whole point of being a melech, is it not, is responsiveness, do something. Okay, what is it about? Is it about your need to do, or is it about the fact that you are what needs to be? And that makes all the difference in the world. And Shmuel basically told him up front, this is the test. I'm telling you to wait until I come. What he should have heard in his ears, if you can wait, then you're a melech. If you cannot wait, you're like everybody else, just in a position of power. He blew it. And so there he is. He's waiting 7 days. The army is scattering. And you can hear him finally just, forget it. I can't take it anymore. Just bring me the carbon. Shmuel says, don't bring the carbon until I come. There's a chi of misa not to listen to an army. Bring it to me. Vayal olan, he's bringing up the olan. Of course, at that moment, you sense the situation. And behold, how do you like that? Here is Shmuel. And just like Shaul always does when he's feeling terribly guilty, which is exactly what happens by Amalek later. Best thing is, meet it head on. Oh, Shalom Aleichem, Akimosi is Parashah. Vayomer Shmuel, same word that Shmuel says, and what about the Meh? Meh Asita, what did you do? Vayomer Shmuel, obviously there's nothing to do about it. Look, the people have scattered. You didn't show up. Plishtim ne safim bichmas. You've got these plishtim now all over. And I don't know. So what am I supposed to do now? So you know what I did? I'll tell you what I did. I was very strong. Because I said to myself, everything in me is saying, don't bring that olam. Because I knew I had to listen to you, you know? But there's such a thing as a tzorech hashah. There's a horah shah. Omar, I say to myself, look, now's the hour. Ata, yerdu plishtim elayah gilgal. The plishtim are going to attack any minute now. Ufne adonai lo chaliti. I didn't mean to bring a korban. People are sitting around, but they're going to go to fight without a korban. What could I do? Ve'etapak, I was strong to overcome my innate unwillingness to do this horrible thing, but what could I do? It had to be done. Ve'etapak always means to overcome your natural tendencies. So I overcame everything in me that said, don't do it. So I was trying not to do it, but I used my mind to be mechayev me to do what was right. And so I went ahead, ve'aleh ha'olah. Instead of realizing lo chalitape, the lashon of Yosef, couldn't keep it in anymore. It's just the opposite. I did what needed to be done. Tzorach hashah, what can you do? And so I brought the yola. Vayomer Shmuel al shol niskalta. Oh boy, have you screwed up. Lo shamarta et mitzvat Adonai Elohecha. What in the world is wrong with you? You didn't keep the one mitzvah that you were given. Asher tzivach. Ki ata, this was the test. Didn't you understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted when we're placing gedula la Adam paskim lo ulevanav levnei vanav atzorof kaladorot, as the Gemara says. That's what you could have been. Echina Adonai et mamlachtecha el Yisrael adolam. You would have waited 5 minutes. You would have had 5 millennia. Ve'ata mamlacha lo takum. Now that's it. It's over. I mean, that was the point. Levilti sur min ha-mitzvah, yamin usmol, leman yarich yamin. And that's it. Hu vanav. Now there's no hu vanav. Now there's no leman yarich yamin. It doesn't have anything to do with how important it is. That's not up to you to decide. It's completely irrelevant. So does it really matter? The very thought that you can now make a judgment about does it really matter means that we're not talking about a Melech Yisrael. We're talking about a political appointee. So then there's no way that your Malchus to be Mikayim. As far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, it's over already. Bikesh Adonai lo ishkil vavo. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks for people that share his heart. You ain't one of them. Vayitzaveu Adonai nagid al amo. That'll be the king. That'll be the one that'll be the nagid. Ki lo shamarta tashet tzivcha Adonai. Because you didn't. And Shmuel got up and walked away. Vayakom Shmuel vayal min ha-gilgal givat binyamin. We don't even find him discussing it. So he leaves. He leaves Gilgal. Okay, so everybody else goes. Vayivkod Shaul et ha'am anim tzi'imimo. So Shaul, okay, we'll do what we can. He's got 600 men left. Keshesh me'ot ish, facing an army of hundreds of thousands, 30,000 tanks. But there's a slightly other important problem, which is that they don't have any weapons. Now this is very much like the thing that we saw happening before, and that was part of the whole idea. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no, these are too many people, you know. You know, can we slice them down? No, there's still too many people. I mean, you know, there's only, you know, a few hundred thousand against you. I mean, what do we need more than a minion for, you know? So the whole point was to be that this is the Shekhinah, that is Yotzeh, and so on and so forth. So what's your problem? So you have 600 people. And tomorrow, if you would have waited now another 2 hours, you would have 300 people. Is that a problem? But you really think it makes a difference when you're facing an army of 300,000 people, you got 300 people, 600 people. Is that your issue? That wasn't the issue. It's that same craziness that people have of always looking at the odds. Somehow, it's slightly better. Overdoing this is status, that is status. What difference is it going to make? Obviously, that's not going to be a solution. So the whole thing is this unbelievable setup that we already saw back in the history of Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says openly, I only want the people that are ready to stay. I don't want the other people. The people who can't stay here don't deserve to be part of your army. This is not the first time I've done this culling. What was the difference to you? So there's 600 people left. Bitachon is a cheap word. Yeah, of course it's bitachon, but it's much deeper than that. It's the entire gestalt of a person. Is he a doer and every last element is part of his doing, or is he an expression of the Ratzon Hashem in the world? In which case, he doesn't think about these things. That's beyond bitachon. It's just what is. This is what I am. That's what a melech is meant to be. This is not a melech. He doesn't share my heart. He doesn't share my heart. What am I going to do? I'm going to give him orders. He's going to listen to the orders. The whole point of a melech is that he doesn't need orders. Is that he thinks the way I would think. That's David. He can't think the way I think. What good is he? I could give anybody orders. I could put a robot up there and give him orders. The whole point of a melech is that he's supposed to express the relationship that I have with Yisrael, and it's automatic. What's going on over here? I can't have this guy. Now this is basically what Shmuel was telling you. So now whoever was left, they also went now. So now they go to Geva Binyamin. They hear now other police. And they've got a whole plan of war, and it's one of these strip and burn plans. They're going to go out there, like we saw earlier, even the early Plishtim, they used to destroy everything, as we saw the first time they came. They would come in with the B'nai Kedem and tear down everything, rip apart the countryside, take everything that was available. So they had mashchitim. Mashchitim, not simply the sense of the stormtroopers, the sense of mashchitim, but literally mashchitim, people that would go out destroying things. So vayetzei ha-mashchit mi-machanei Plishtim shlosha roshim. So now they forked in three directions. Harosh echad yifnei al derech Ofra el eretz Shu'al. So this went to the area we saw before. There was a Shu'alim. It could be that this whole area was called because there were a lot of Shu'alim. I mean, either maybe jackals or foxes, but it was they called it the eretz Shu'al.
Where did you see that?
Yeah, we had the Shu'alim. Yeah, called it the eretz Shu'alim. Maybe Al Shem eretz Shu'al. It wasn't clear where it was. Varosh echad yifne derech Beit Horon, varosh echad yifne derech hagvul hanishkaf al gei hatzvoim hamidbara. So the other was now on the edge of the border of Binyamin, and you could see from there was a massive rock that you could look over the area of the tzvoim. Tzvoim are. Well, that's the modern usage. I mean, according to Chazal, it's a type of sheret, so it's like a type of poisonous snake. So, you know, it's a serpent valley, you know, you could call it. It's not happy places, these places. So these were the setup of the Plishtim, and now we need to mention that there was a slight problem. The slight problem was that there wasn't one factory in the whole country, because the Plishtim had destroyed all metalwork, much as the Israelis go after the metal factories that form the rockets. So the Plishtim saw to it that every professional smith was taken to Plishtim in captivity. So v'charash lo yimatzei b'chol Eretz Yisrael. First time Eretz Yisrael is mentioned in the entire Tanakh, right?
Is this the only time?
No. But a charash is not found in the entire Eretz Yisrael. Kiamru Plishtim, because this was a fantastic policy they had. Ben yasui v'rim cherev ochanit. Can't have the Jews having metal workers, because the metal workers are going to end up building rockets. That's all we need. So they'll end up with swords and with spears. Let them come to us if they need something. What, they have a problem with their kitchen knives, they can bring it to Plishtim kitchen knife sharpening. They have a problem with a plow, they can bring it to Plishtim plow sharpeners. And we'll make money off the deal while we're at it. But we're certainly not going to give them the ability to take care of it on their own. And so vayirdu kol ish Yisrael haPlishtim. So they were stuck in a position in which everybody would have to go down to the Plishtim in order to take care of their needs. So they went down Liltosh Ish et Macharashto, vet Eto, vet Kardamo, vet Macharashto. So they would need for the most simple agricultural needs. So you have a plow, a spade, an axe, a hoe, or the pin that goes into the Macharasha. And they'd have to go to the Eretz Plishtim. If not, then there was no way to sharpen it. What they would use in an emergency was vaitat svira fim, which seems to mean fim, mouths. So what they had was the tzira, which is the sharpening. They would use a sharpening mouth, meaning they had some type of file device, which we use today in kitchens. So that has ridges on either side of a place where you insert things. So this had various sizes. It was like a file that had multi openings that you could put things into. So it had different grooves in it. And that's what you would use if you needed to file anything you couldn't get down to the Plishtim. So they used that for the Machreshot and La'itim and to the Shlosh Kirshons and to the Kardomim. The Shlosh Kirshons are three pronged pitchforks. Yeah, there's actually a very nice picture from Lachish of a Shlosh Kirshon that they found in Lachish. It's very similar to the modern day long pitchfork.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, the handle didn't survive. Very cool picture. Okay, so that's what they would use. Now, as you can imagine, that wasn't much of a use when it came to fighting tanks. So this is the situation that they were in anyway. So let's try to imagine what's going through your heads. I mean, if you're really thinking about military possibilities, or forget it. Nobody should have been thinking about military possibilities in the first place, because there weren't any weapons. What good is an army without any weapons against tanks? So the whole thing was crazy from the beginning. Yonatan's a nut. Which is going around attacking the Netziv HaPlishtim, knowing he doesn't have any weapons. And we'll see. Boy, is he a nut. It's only nuts that are able to do anything. He's the one that ends up, indeed, bringing the entire Yeshua. Because he didn't care, couldn't care less. It was meaningless to him. To Shaul, it was still meaningful. He was worried. And so, this, indeed, now, and of course, Yonatan becomes now the transition of the Malchus to David. Not coincidentally. This is all part of the same story that develops ultimately in that the Ish Asher Kilavavo ends up being the love object of Yonatan. That means that Yonatan really did have it. And that the meeting of David and Yonatan, the instantaneous love, is only because it's Kilavavo. There's a sense of that we're like the same person, twin spirits, as you say. Right? And that's exactly what they were sensing. Shaul never felt that way about Yonatan. And indeed, the tension between Shaul and Yonatan immediately springs in the next paragraph. It's immediately evident. And this becomes now the whole problem in the acceptance of Shaul that the Malchus is done for. So, Vaya b'yom milchemet, so here now it comes to a day of milchama, v'lo nimtza cherev v'chanit b'yad kol ha'am, asher et Shaul v'ed Yonatan. The entire army didn't have a single rifle. The only one who had a weapon, v'timatze l'Shaul v'yonatan b'no. Some say b'derech neis. Nobody else had the guts lechatchila to try to hide it. Probably a death penalty if you didn't hand in your weapons. Nobody had weapons. They were the only ones who didn't hand in their weapons. In other words, either it means somehow magically they had it, despite the fact. No, they used to have. What happened to all their weapons? Apparently, the Plishtim cracked down on it. If we find weapons by anybody, you're dead.
Vayetze matzav Plishtim el ma'avar michmas.
And so the Plishtim war structure now began to move and came to what was known as Ma'avar Michmas, and I've actually included in your downloads a picture of the area of the steep hills around the Michmas, and this is where it is that they ended up, right, as we'll see tomorrow, right at the edge of a valley which is called Ma'avar Michmas, the place where you pass through along the bottom of Michmas.
To the pass, which is the way to go down to Gilgal.
We use the word as a position. The matzav is the actual army that is coming now as a walking position, so to speak. So it means, oh, this is a real cliffhanger. That's right, yeah, of course.